Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Web Sleuth Radio, my friends. My name is Tricia Griffith, the very proud owner of WebSleuth.com. And with us tonight is our trusty producer, Bessie. She does all the heavy lifting. I get to do all the fun, easy stuff. We have a couple of incredible guests on the show tonight. I'd like to welcome first Jim Clemente. Now, Jim, I'm sure you have seen him, heard him. He has been an FBI profiler for 22 years. He has since retired and has taken his incredible abilities and has started working on other cases. Jim Clemente, thank you for joining us tonight on Web Sleuth Radio. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm good. Thank you. And also joining us, our good friend Levi Page from The Levi Page Show. Levi, as you know, is doing an incredibly deep investigative report on the Haley Cummings case, what has happened since that little girl disappeared that night and has never been seen since. And that is on The Levi Page Show on Blog Talk Radio. Levi, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tricia. Thanks for having me. Just a correction, my podcast series on the Haley Cummings case, it's on iTunes. You can just search the Haley Cummings mystery, and you'll find it there.
Wonderful. Sorry about that. Thank you, Levi. We'll talk about your podcast as well as the end of the show. But tonight I want to talk about a case that has everybody by the heart, because who, when they were growing up, didn't get with their best friend when you're 12, 13, and head out on a little hike? That's just exactly what Abby Williams and Libby Thurman did, broad daylight, mind you, in the small town of Delphi, Indiana. And they went on a hike. They went across the bridge, and then their body on some land about a half mile away from the bridge, murdered. It is a compelling case because, number one, we have a picture of the suspect, not only a picture of the suspect, but we also have audio of the suspect. Why? Because Libby was smart enough to take a picture of Abby with the man behind them, which makes you think that they knew this guy was following them. Also, there's a little bit of audio. So we know Libby recorded this man. The way it cuts off so quickly, you have to assume that there is a lot more audio that the police haven't released yet. But that's pretty much all we know. And with Jim Clement, I am hoping, and I know you will be able to kind of wrap us up in the mind of this man. Now, granted, he hasn't been proven guilty, but let's face it, let's not, pussyfoot around here. This guy is apparently the killer. And Jim Clemente, profiler, criminal profiler, you have girls, broad daylight. Tell us about what type of man would go after these two girls in broad daylight.
Well, first of all, we have to look at the fact that there's a lot of information that's lacking, but the behavior here does tell us some things. And although we don't have a cause of death, we can generally all know at this point that the manner of death was homicide. This was a murder, a double murder, and of teenage girls, and obviously a heinous crime. And my heart and my sympathies go out to the families of Abigail Williams and Liberty German. And so I just want to start off with that. The person that is depicted in this picture that's been publicized and the audio tape or the audio recording that we hear, this may very well be the killer, but obviously we can't make any assumptions about whether that is the killer or not. However, what we can say is there are some very interesting aspects. The fact that this small community, kids and young people and adults alike, like to frequent this area and the nature trails and the scenic area, including the bridge, that tells me that this person went to a target-rich environment, somebody actually hunting for an opportunity. The fact that they did not advertise that they were going there, the fact that nobody followed them to this location that we know of, tells me that it was more of an impulsive crime. And that means it's a high-risk crime. In other words, this person wouldn't know when the next people would come by, and he wouldn't know what the arrangements were with respect to these two girls, as well as the fact that he decided to take two girls at once, which is another high-risk factor. So all those things that I've just mentioned, tell me it was a crime of opportunity and not somebody who had been stalking these girls over a period of time. It was just happenstance that they happened to be the ones that sort of fell in his pathway at this time when he was hunting in this target-rich environment. I believe that because there were two girls, he must have had some method to control them, and that was likely a weapon. Whether that ends up being the murder weapon or not, or just his method of controlling them. In other words, he could have had a knife or a gun and threatened them with that, and that was to control them, get them off the beaten path into a place where he had more privacy and control. And if we, when we go into this audio recording, I think that'll give us further indications of what he had done with respect to them. So I believe that this guy, because he acted impulsively, that he couldn't have planned this out in great detail in advance. If he had been fantasizing about doing something like this, it would have been a general fantasy, not directed at these two particular girls. Again, they just happened to be victims of opportunity.
Jim, doesn't that really terrify everybody? I mean, because if you're correct, which I believe you are, that this was they're victims of opportunity. He wasn't seeking them out. How many more of these killers are there out there? And do we have to hover over our kids like helicopters? This just terrifies me. How do we keep our kids getting hysterical?
Well, the thing is that this is not the greatest risk to children in this country or around the world. The fact is that stranger abduction, it is a horrible crime, a horrific crime, and it does shake the very foundations of our families and our communities and this nation. But it is a very, very rare crime. In other words, out of 350-some-odd million people in this country, it happens maybe 150 or 160 times a year. And so it's a very rare occurrence. But when you talk about child sexual victimization, that crime happens every single day, multiple thousands of times across this country. And so, yes, we should hover over our children and protect them, but it's less likely that they're going to be taken by a stranger than it is for them to be sexually victimized by somebody they know. And it's people they know and they trust and they love. It is not people who are complete strangers.
And that's what everybody needs to remember. Look at who is around your children. And that, like you said, is more likely the case. That is where your children will could come into harm. Let's go to Levi now. I'm sorry, Jim, go ahead, please.
More than 90% of the kids who were sexually victimized are victimized by somebody they know, trust, and love. And that means that it's somebody that their parents have thought was a good person and trusted them with the care of their child. So what I would say is, although it is a possibility, it is a small possibility that your children, especially when they're with other of their friends and they're in a semi-public environment, that they'd be abducted. That's extremely low probability. But when it happens, obviously, it's completely devastating. So, but what's great, I think the lesson to be learned from this case is that Libby actually must have been situationally aware, understood that there was a threat, listened to her instincts, and tried to do something to document that. And she took a picture of this guy. She recorded his voice. She was doing things that were active. I will tell you this. Parents, tell your children and talk to your friends about the fact that if somebody is trying to take control of you and move you to another location, that is the highest risk situation you could be in. In other words, even if somebody is pointing a knife or a gun at you, it's better to fight and run, or run and fight if you have to, than it is to go with them to another location. Because they will only take you to a place where they have more privacy and control. And then you're at a place where they have more privacy and control, and they could do whatever they want to you, and it's private, and they control it, and they control you. But if you fight for your life, with your life if necessary, then you will never have to be at their complete mercy. And they're at most risk when they're taking you from a place. They're at much more risk than they are when they get you to another place that's more private.
Right, and that's good for not only kids, but adults as well, women. If somebody holds a gun and says, get in the car, if you're going to be killed anyway, be killed running away or screaming or doing something. That's you never know how you're going to react if that happens.
Use your personal weapons, your thumbnails in their eyes. Punch the, use your fingertips into their throat. Take a pen and jab it in their eye, jab it in their throat. Anything, a key. Fight with your life. Kick, scream, bite, yell. Do everything you possibly can. The more noise, the more nuisance you make, the harder it is for them to take you. Nobody should go with anybody else who is threatening you with a weapon or with any kind of harm. That is not the safest thing to do. That is the worst thing you can do, is comply if they have already pulled a weapon, if they have shown an intent to do you harm. It's not going to get any better if you go with them.
That's absolutely right. That is great advice. And we're going to get to that phone call that we've been talking, not phone call, the recording that we've been talking about here of the suspect's voice in just a moment. But first I want to go to Levi Page. Levi, you've been following this case very closely along with the rest of us. It's very frustrating because the police have not released very much information, and people on Web Sleuth, it's our busiest case by far, hands down. We have, 5,000, 6,000 people on there on that, just that one case all the time. So what do you think? What do you take from the information that we know from the mainstream media about Libby and Abby's killing?
Well, we do know that there has been a search warrant on the property of the 77-year-old man where the bodies were found. His name is Ron Logan, and he was also arrested recently for probation violation, but that was for a DUI. It was nothing like a violent felony. So there's no evidence that he's actually connected to the murders of these two teens. But a lot of people are saying that he looks like he could be the person in the photograph that has been floating around and provided to the media. However, investigators are cautioning people about pointing the finger directly at him. There's no evidence at this point that ties him to the murders, but he's 77 years old. He was arrested for probation violation. The bodies were found on his property after a search warrant was obtained. It's going to be interesting to see if he has been completely cooperative with law enforcement. We know that he has an attorney, and that attorney has released a statement to the media saying that he is completely innocent. And also interesting is that as soon as the bodies were discovered on his property, he was giving an interview with the local media there in Indiana, and he described this 53 acres of property that he's owned for 53 years. He's described it as his sanctuary. He said that he and his son spent a lot of time on that property in the woods, and he could never imagine anything like this happening on his property.
Well, can I just add something?
That is,
yes,
oh,
go
please,
ahead.
Jim.
I mean, it could be the property owner, but it could also be a relative, and as you said, his son grew up there. It could be somebody who worked on this property. It could be a neighbor. It could be a former tenant. It could be somebody who used it as, it was in their sort of zone of comfort where they went between where they lived and where they worked or where they played. So there's all these different possibilities. It does, just because they're searching, they got a search warrant for that property, doesn't mean that they necessarily suspect the owner of that property. There are a lot of other potential people who could have, A, done something on that property or disposed of the bodies on that property. But the fact is that because there were two of them, I would think the most high probability was that they were actually killed there on that property. If it is secluded, if there are areas where this guy could have this offender could have privacy and control, then I think the chances that they, you know, killed the girls in one location and transported them to another location are pretty low, unless this there was actually a road, a secondary road, or a road that he could have had a vehicle on to transport those bodies. Two bodies at one time is a lot for one person to handle. So, you know, when we see double victims like this, we immediately either assume that there were multiple offenders or that there was a weapon used to control the multiple victims.
Let's listen now to that phone call, I keep calling it a phone call, to that recording that Libby made with her phone of the man. And it's going to repeat here several times, and I apologize if it's a little too loud here. We're having trouble with our system, so here we go. Let's see what we can hear. Well, it's not working. I was having trouble with it earlier.
I can play it if it
helps. Can you, Jim, if you could play it, that would be great, if you have it handy.
Hold on, there we go. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. And for whatever reason. Downhill. Could you hear that okay?
Downhill. Could hear it all, hear it great. Now, a lot of people are saying that he's saying get down the hill or go down the hill. The police have only said, if I remember correctly, and I don't know if this has changed since the last I checked, police are saying that all they'll say is down the hill. But I can hear, and I think most people can hear, either get down the hill or go down the hill. Jim, what do you think?
No, not go down the hill. There's a T, there's a hard T at the end. It's get down the hill. I've listened to many thousands of hours of tapes and in law enforcement transcription purposes, and I'm in my listening to it, I believe it's he says get down the hill, and that tells me that he was trying to get them away from the traveled path, get them into a more private location, and actually that's how he took control of them. The fact is that many times the politeness of people can be used to their disadvantage. And especially with kids, you know, and these are nice young girls who, you know, who had, you know, absolutely nothing malicious going on in their lives, and for some reason this guy happened to kill them. But they probably were taught as children to listen to adults and to mm-hmm. look up to adults. We have to remember that kids grow up in a land of giants. Everybody is twice as big as Shaq to them when they're kids. You know, everybody is bigger mm-hmm. than them. They're told to look up to them and respect them. And it seems like somebody like this may have taken advantage of that. He did something that made Libby, made her survivor instinct kick in. And because of that, she took this picture and recorded. And so something told her that something was not right here. But they probably, not wanting to make him feel bad, not wanting to not listen to him, they probably initially complied with something that he told them to do, which gave him an opportunity to get close to them and corral them and control them. So it's unfortunate, but basically the manners that we teach our kids sometimes are taken advantage of by offenders. And so mm-hmm. it's important for us to know, and there's a great book by Gavin DeBecker called The Gift of Fear. It's important for us to know that we should listen to our instincts. When the hair stands up on the back of your neck, when you get a really uneasy feeling in your gut because of someone or some situation, get away from them. Do everything you can to mm-hmm. get away from them and get away from that situation. And for parents, Gavin DeBecker wrote another book called Protecting the Gift, about how you can protect your children. So I think those are great books for your listeners to read. And, I mean, we recommend it to people all the time on our podcast, Real Crime Profile, because it's important that every parent knows that you can actually give your kids tools to help make them safer. And this is one of the things that we're born innately with, but we can also educate our children so that they'll listen to their instincts and try to avoid situations where somebody like this, whoever this killer is, this horrific person, would take advantage of them.
Exactly. And you brought up a great point, Jim Clemente, and that is we teach our kids to be polite, always be polite to adults. And we need to make sure we teach them if that adult is going to do anything to make you feel uncomfortable, you run. You know, like Mark Classer said, if you're in a crowd, if a kid's in a crowd and there's somebody that makes him feel uncomfortable or makes a child scared, run to a woman, run to an older woman. Don't just listen to the person and have them go with them. But how many times have we seen this on television when they do the experiment and the parents say, my kids will never go with a stranger, and boom. Kids get in the car and take candy from strangers immediately. So you're absolutely right, and this could have been.
Let me tell you why. Because we tell kids strangers and predators. But the problem is, and as I said before, the vast majority of kids will be victimized by people they know. And when somebody is nice to that child, or let's say somebody says something to the parent in the park, just, hey, how you doing? Just saying hello, and the parent says, hello, have a nice day, you know, that is enough to make them not a stranger anymore in the child's mind. And if the person comes up to the kid and says, hi, how you doing? Oh, I love this, or here's my puppy, or want to look at these flowers, whatever it is, they don't act like a stranger. And so kids are confused what a stranger really is. And now today, kids meet people all the time on their phones, on the internet, on their iPads, on their games, and they don't believe these people are strangers. The fact is that we give our kids access to these electronic devices, we also have to give them the knowledge that people will pose as good people, but yet try to do bad things. And that could be over a period of time, grooming kids into a situation. In this particular case, I believe that this guy had to act very quickly. He took advantage of a situation he saw, acted right then and there, and was able to corral these girls to a position where he could control them. And it's unfortunate. At least Libby was conscious enough of this bad feeling that she had that she started recording it. But we need to give our kids even more tools and tell them it's okay to be rude to an adult if they're trying to do something or if they make you feel uncomfortable. It's okay. You're allowed to get away. You're allowed to ignore them. You're allowed to yell and scream and kick and bite if you have to get away from them. And by giving our kids permission to do this, we can avoid them falling into dangerous situations, hopefully. And we can also have them avoid situations where seemingly good people, friends of the family, even relatives, in some cases family members, they can do bad things, even though they seem to be good people. Kids have to be made aware of this. Unfortunately, what I find is that many parents choose to protect kids from sexual victimization or threats like this guy poses by keeping them naive and safe and sheltered. Unfortunately, that doesn't do anything to protect them because you can't be with them 24 hours a day, every day. And so can you imagine a world in which we live on a busy street and we want to protect our kids from the risks of getting hit by a car on this busy street by not telling them that it's a risk? No, we wouldn't do that.
Yeah,
we walk up the curb,
ridiculous.
We push the thing, we teach them how to wait for the light, we teach them how to look both ways, and we hold their hands going back and forth for years until they're old enough to do it on their own. Yet when it comes to sex, we don't want to talk to our kids about that. We don't want to talk to them about the potential for sexual victimization. We don't want to talk to them about the potential for Stranger Danger. We're more inclined to talk to them about Stranger Danger and Predators than we are about the people that we think are good people, that we know and trust and love, but who would take advantage of kids. So it's an open dialogue. Your kid has to be able to talk to you about these things as well as you talking to them. It has to be a conversation back and forth, or the child will not raise the issue with you. They will think that they're not allowed to talk about the thing.
Not allowed to talk about it because it's something about sex, and you just don't mention sex in the household. You're right, Jim. That's got to stop. We're talking with Jim Clemente, FBI agent for over 22 years, profiler as well. He's retired now. And Jim and his brother will be hosting CrimeCon 17. We'll be talking about that in just a moment. My other guest, Levi Page, we all know Levi. Levi has been here for years investigating the cases that we all know, Casey Anthony, Haley Cummings, and so many others I can't even begin to mention. We're talking about Abby and Libby, the horrible murders. Bridge Guy is what the suspect is called in true crime discussion circles, the picture that Libby took of the man following them. And Levi Page, like I said, you've been around a long time. Isn't this case one of the most frustrating cases because there is so little release? Your mind just starts coming up with all these crazy scenarios. Everybody wants to help. Everybody wants to do something, but nobody, unless you know this person, and so far we haven't had anybody come forward and say they know who this guy is, unless you personally know him, he's just another stranger, like Jim said, very rare stranger danger out there. But this case is very frustrating, isn't it, Levi?
It is, and people thought with Adelphi, Indiana, being an extremely small and rural area, that the killer would have been apprehended sooner because there's only so many people that are living in this area. And since it is a small, tight-knit community, they thought that someone would have identified him by now. But that has not been the case. But law enforcement is getting a lot of tips in, and people need to call in with tips to the Delphi police if they have any credible tips of who this killer is. And I wanted to ask Jim a question about where the bodies were found, and they were found on a property, and like you said earlier, it doesn't mean that the property owner is the killer or he had anything to do with it, but do you think that it's extremely likely that the killer was familiar with this property?
Well, familiarity is a spectrum of behavior. I think that he was somewhat familiar. I mean, he was certainly more comfortable doing what he did there than he would have been comfortable doing it on the bridge where they first met. I think it had to have a level of seclusion that gave him a little more confidence that he could do what he wanted to do. So it is a possibility and maybe leaning towards a probability that he had scoped that out, and maybe he was a vagrant living in the woods there. Maybe he had some, you know, prior work experience there or had some reason to go by there for either a work situation or a family situation or even a recreational situation. But I think that he most likely was using that location to get more privacy than he would have had in, you know, on the general area where he abducted them.
Interesting. You know, if somebody emailed me earlier, and we talk about getting tips to the police. And this person that emailed me swears they have run into this person on the bridge before. They've had a run-in with this person, and they escaped because they knew this guy was no good and very scared of him and was able to get away from him. Said the voice is the same, the guy looks exactly the same. This person claims to have run into this particular person, and he keeps calling the police, and they don't return his call, and they don't return his email. Jim, I would assume it's just because they have thousands of tips to go through, right?
There's only 3,000 people in this town. I don't agree with that. I don't think that's why. If he's actually not returning the calls, it may be because this person has made many calls before on other cases and just wants to be involved. I cannot believe that if he actually said that to the police, that they have not returned his call. It just it would just be ridiculously poor conduct on the side of the police. This is a town of 3,000 people. There, I mean, in the time since this crime has occurred, they could have interviewed every single one of those people. They could have, at least every single one of those males, they could have brought that picture up and held it up against every male in that town, and, you know, and they would know whether or not any male was, you know, within the range of that picture depicts. So I think, you know, the police know a lot more than what they're putting out public, because that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to solve this crime. Mm-hmm. It's not their job to tell the people what's going on unless there is a public danger. So they put the picture out to show people, just in case they do know this person, and hopefully they will identify them. But I don't think that they would refuse to call up somebody who legitimately has contacted them and said that there was a prior contact with the same individual. I just think there may be some issues with that report that you got.
Understood. Levi, you brought up the search warrant earlier. The search warrant was served on Ron Logan, the property owner, on his home while Ron Logan was in jail. Didn't have anything to do with this case. Had to do with a parole violation, a DUI, I believe. Jim, what is, hypothetically, what would the police be looking for in Ron Logan's home? I have no idea what they would even put down.
Well, all right. Well, first thing, do you know that it's limited to Ron's home? Because a search warrant is
I don't.
A location. It could be the premises itself, the building. It could be outbuildings. Mm-hmm. It could be shed somewhere else on the property. This is a very big property, as far as I know. And it could mm-hmm. be for the entire confines of that property. So, remember, if let's say he said that...
The warrant allowed them to search the property and the house, and they've seized his pickup truck. That's what we know.
Okay.
There
well,
you go. That's
and
it,
again, that could be an indication that it was that he was involved, or a family member, or somebody that worked with him, or somebody that he knows were involved in this crime. And it's possible that they're doing it to rule out mm-hmm. the owner. But so let's not just, you know, go down the road of he's definitely guilty because of that. The fact is that he could be and he may not be. He could have helped somebody after the fact not knowing that they were involved in a crime. He could have helped them before mm-hmm. the fact not knowing that they were intending to commit a crime. There's all sorts of possibilities. But the fact is, we have to let them do their job. Unfortunately, the girls are dead. It's a horrible, horrific crime. It rocks the foundations of our communities, especially when this happens to, you know, such young, innocent girls. But the fact is that they will do their job. They will try to put together a case. The fact that they're using a search warrant and not simply consent to search means that they want to make sure that any evidence they find is admissible in a court of law. And I think that is something that should be done in every case, and they're doing it. So I have a high confidence level that if he was involved or if someone else used that vehicle or some other premises on that property, that the law enforcement will be able to prove that. And
well,
Ron
Logan is telling Inside Edition that he was at a fish market buying tropical fish at
mm-hmm.
the time that this murder was committed, and that is his alibi. That is what he's telling Inside Edition. He says, I was not home during the time this was happening. I was in Lafayette and didn't get home until 6:30 in the evening, and the neighbor stopped and asked permission to look back there for the girls, he said.
Got it.
So that's what he's telling Inside Edition.
Okay, and, you know, I'm sure that if that's the case, then maybe there's going to be some record of that, but it doesn't mean that somebody else wasn't there. And,
mm-hmm.
and you know, there have been cases. There was a case in Orange Park, Florida, that I worked where they believe this girl just vanished off the face of the earth. And it became very obvious to me based on their description that it was a similar situation in that it was an impulsive act because nobody knew, no offender knew that the girl would be alone and in that place at that time. But the fact was that she didn't scream. She didn't alert in any way. Nobody knew that she just went missing. And there were hundreds of kids walking out of school at the same time. So, but that what that told me was that the reason why she didn't alert, she didn't scream, was because she had seen that guy every day. He was always there. She walked right by his house every day. And at first they said it can't be because they ruled out all the people that lived in the houses that were right there. And I said, well, you need to go back because somebody else lives there too that you don't know about. There's somebody else. And it turns out 2 months later, and I said he probably also left town very quickly for some emergency reason, and he won't come back till this thing all calms down. And 2 months later, sure enough, a guy who had lived in the house right in front of which she went missing, when his parents got foreclosed on and they moved to another state, he moved into the shed in the back of the house and was stealing electricity from the house next door, and he had in fact abducted this girl and killed her. So it's sometimes not on its face the obvious person that you're looking for, but it's somebody in their family, in their circle of friends, in their circle of workers, and so forth. So I don't know for sure. Obviously we don't have enough facts, but if this guy has a this guy may have an airtight alibi, and it may be able to be proven, but it also may be false. We'll just have to see. Time will tell.
But, Jim, he's 77. We're talking about Russell Logan, the owner of the property. He's 77. Wouldn't that surprise you that somebody at that age would do something this horrific, or should it not surprise us?
Well, it can surprise you, but it's not impossible. I don't know how mobile this guy is. It comes down to the individual. Is he very physically active, or is he not? I mean, those are things you're going to have to look at. What is his interaction with other human beings? What's his interaction with adolescent girls in the past? I mean, there are all sorts of questions that we can ask, and I'm certain that the investigators are asking those questions. And so I think it's certainly within the realm of possibility. Is it the most probable? I don't know. I mean, you can look at this picture, and you can take a guess on how old this guy is or isn't. But if somebody is 77, that doesn't mean they can't commit murder. I mean, there's certainly plenty of cases, and there are plenty of, you know, crimes that are committed by people that are in their 70s and 80s.
Well, that's right. It was just somebody arrested recently who was close to 90 for child abuse. It's just, again, shocking, and it was somebody that the family knew. It was very tragic case. You wouldn't think you have to worry about a 90-year-old, but you know what? I guess in this day and age, you absolutely have to. Jim Clemente, let's change the topic for just a moment here and talk about Crime Con 17. Now, this is going to be held in Indianapolis. Levi, I hope you're coming. I might swing by your area and pick you up and make you come with me because it's going to be an amazing event. It's a 3-day event in June. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you and your brother will be doing at the Crime Con 17.
Yeah, my brother and I started a company called XG Productions in 2008. And we are a production company. We do media development and production and writing for shows like Criminal Minds, Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, Quantico, Blindspot, all the big crime shows that are on TV we've interacted with. And so our company is staffed by former feds. That's where the name comes from. XG means former G-men. And so it's former feds and special forces, special operations guys and women, and people who've worked for other three-letter agencies and the police departments and prosecutors. So our focus is crime and all the tangential areas where crime touches on. And we were asked by the creators of Crime Con to host the event, so we're really excited about that. So Tim and I and some of our other people like Bobby Chacon are going to be hosting individual sessions and the Crime Con itself, Crime CrimeCon 2017. And our company is going to be hosting a podcast studio. So we're going to do some live podcasts for our podcast, Real Crime Profile, and other podcasts. And we're going to open it up to let other people do live podcasts from CrimeCon themselves. So we'll be doing that. We'll be advertising that and coordinating that shortly. We're also going to do some sessions where we speak about crimes and our careers, and also we're going to do some interactive sessions as well. But we're pretty excited about it. There's so many podcasts coming, and authors, and writers, and crime novelists, and people who work on defense attorneys and prosecutors, as well as Nancy Grace will be there. So it's going to be a great mm-hmm. We can't wait.
It's going to be an amazing time.
9th.
June 9th to
yes.
the 11th,
yes.
I believe, and you can get tickets. If you buy tickets and put in the promo code WebSleuth, you'll get 20% off. So WebSleuth will be there. I'll be there. Hopefully several of our members and our administrators will be there as well. And Levi Page, like I said, I think I'm going to come and drag you there because we can't have this without you. Nurmi is going to be there from the Jodi Arias trial, Levi. So I know you would like to sit down and have a long conversation with Kirk Nurmi. I know a lot of people would. I think he's going to be a very popular man there because a lot of people have a lot of questions still about the Jodi Arias case. He's the defense attorney. He's one of the defense attorneys in Jodi Arias' case.
I'm talking about the prosecutor for the Making a Murder case is also going to be there.
Oh, that's going to be amazing. Oh, I can't wait to hear that person. Let's talk about a little bit about your podcast, Jim. And we've kept you a long time. I appreciate it. Tell us about the podcast. It's done, 11 million downloads?
Yeah, we're over 11 million downloads in the first 14 months. We are on Wondery.com. That's our host, but you can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher and all the other podcast hosts. But it's hosted by myself, and I'm a retired FBI profiler and former New York City prosecutor, as well as a writer and producer on Criminal Minds, and Laura Richards, who is a former New Scotland Yard forensic psychologist who I worked with over the years, and she and I did the case of JonBenet Ramsey on CBS together. And then Lisa Zambetti, who is the casting director for Criminal Minds, and she acts as sort of the every person. She keeps us, Laura and I, from going off into our sort of behavioral analysis speak, and she asks the questions that our listeners write to us about, and what we try to do is cover all the cases from a victim's perspective. So instead of calling it the O.J. Simpson case, we call it the Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman case. Instead of calling it the Amanda Knox case, we call it the Meredith Kircher case, because investigators and profilers, when we work the cases, remember, we don't know who killed these people in the beginning. We investigate the death of a victim. And so the first thing we do is learn victimology, and that's everything you can learn about the victim. So we get to know the victims, and later, at the end, when we catch them, we know the name of the offender, but we don't like memorializing that person. We like giving a voice back to the victims. And so that's the main of our podcast, Real Crime Profile. And you can follow us on Facebook at Real Crime Profile and on Twitter at Real Crime Profile, but drop the E at the end of our handle. It's at Real Crime Profile, P-R-O-F-I-L. There's no E at the end of it. But we try to do is really dig down behind the scenes in some of the shows like Making a Murderer and the O.J. Simpson show, and the Oscar Pistorius case and the Meredith Kircher murder. We dig down behind that, and we've just finished a long series on the Bayou killings. Did you know that in Louisiana, in one period, there were 5 serial killers operating at the same time? It was crazy.
When was that?
Well, it was in the 90s, and
Okay,
so we covered a whole bunch of those cases as well. And I'll give you guys a little bit of a spoiler. We may be launching a very new podcast at CrimeCon. And so you'll have something else to look forward to as well. We'll start it with a live podcast from CrimeCon, and we're going to have an audience. There'll be a limited number of guests available, so we'll figure out a way. Maybe we'll have a sweepstakes to see who can actually sit in the audience when we do the first live podcast. But it's going to be great. We're really excited about it.
And
well,
I love listening to Real Crime Profile. It's a great podcast.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and
like I said, you've got to come. There's no way you can stay home for this. Jim Clemente, thank you so much for joining us tonight. You have been very gracious with your time and your information. I'm sure I'll have you on again soon, and we'll meet up at CrimeCon 2017.
Great. Well, I really appreciate it, Tricia, and nice meeting you, Levi, and hopefully we'll see you both at CrimeCon 2017.
Okay, thanks, Jim. Take care now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Levi Page, this was a last-minute deal with Jim Clemente. I had a wrong email address. Anyway, you know how those things go. So it was kind of a last minute that he was able to come on, and I'm so glad he did. Now, I know a lot of people wanted to talk to him about the JonBenet Ramsey case. Jim Clemente is one of the driving forces behind that amazing CBS show that was incredible. It's the only one you really should watch, in my opinion. And, of course, since, in my opinion, it told the truth, that always means a Ramsey lawsuit is around the corner. So Jim obviously can't talk about the Ramsey case because he's being sued by Burke Ramsey, or his company is, and CBS, everybody involved with it. I shouldn't say he's being sued. CBS is being sued, and he's part of all of that. Burke Ramsey is suing for $750 million, just a little pocket change. Suing for telling the truth. In my opinion, don't sue me. It's my opinion. Anyway, Levi, great guest, right?
Yes, and I really do enjoy listening to Real Crime Profile. That's the podcast that he does, and I was very excited when I heard that he was going to be on the show.
Oh, I'm glad he was able to make it. Now, real quickly, I just want to put a bug in your ear. You will come to CrimeCon. We can't have it without Levi Page. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's like having apple pie without the apples, for God's sakes, people. So anyway, Levi, I'll talk to you about that. We'll work it out, okay? You got to be there.
Okay.
Deal? Okay. Now, let's talk about this case, this Amber Alert case. And everybody is going crazy trying to find this young woman, Elizabeth Thomas, ran away with a 50-year-old guy named Tad Cummins, who was a teacher, I believe. I mean, they have pictures. Don't they have pictures of Tad buying hair dye? I've heard
at Walmart,
shaved his head and dyed her hair, and you know, this is just so beyond creepy, Levi. It is. Now, when I was in high school in the mid-70s, it's weird because I knew at least three or four people that were having affairs with teachers. It just happened, and it was never made a big deal. If they were caught, the teacher was never fired. It was just not the big deal that it is today, and it should be, because back then, as today, it's about the manipulation, about the power, and about the younger mind just falling head over heels for this person, thinking, quote, they're the one. It was wrong back in the 70s during my high school days. It's wrong today, and this guy, he needs to be caught. He needs to be caught. Tad Cummins needs to be caught. And this poor girl needs to be rescued. I'm sure she doesn't think she needs to be rescued, right?
Well, Tricia, she did tell a sibling. It's being reported on the Nashville station WKRN, the ABC affiliate in Nashville, that she did tell a sibling that if the day that she went missing, that if she was not home by 6 p.m. to call law enforcement. So apparently she was scared, or otherwise she would not have given that warning to her sibling. And we're talking about a 50-year-old man with a 15-year-old girl. And that is wrong, no matter how you dice it. Why would somebody that is 50 want to have a relationship with someone that is 15? That's sick, and I think that people mm-hmm. that poo-poo that are also pretty sick, too.
Well, the thing is, you really have to think about the 15-year-old. And it's hard to go back to when we were 15, but you have to. And you have to look at your kids at 15. Would you want a 50-year-old swooping in? Doesn't matter if it's a girl and a teacher, a male teacher, a female teacher and a boy. It's the 50-year-old has something twisted in the brain. It's, for some reason, they feel they can only relate to young teenagers who haven't formed an opinion, their bodies haven't fully developed, they don't have any strong political leanings. It's like somebody they feel they can mold like clay. I just am surprised they haven't found him yet. They must be just holed up somewhere and not going out, not doing anything. You've heard anything else? The problem is I haven't had a chance to check today. I was hoping there was news when I came home, but I guess they haven't had any sightings or anything, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. There was that that video of Cummins in Walmart purchasing hair dye, and the card that he used to make purchases at Walmart has not been used since the abduction of 15-year-old Elizabeth Thomas. And just to give everybody the backstory on this, the victim was in his forensic science class. He was the teacher. She was a student. And he had actually been fired from his job at this high school because another student witnessed him kiss her, Elizabeth Thomas, on the cheek in front of people. And he was terminated as a result after there was an investigation. And here's what's pretty disturbing is that right before she was abducted, Elizabeth Thomas went on Instagram and she posted the emoji of a ring and then the word wife. She posted that on Instagram. And right before the abduction, he was also on Instagram acting like a teenager, which shows you how creepy this guy. He's 50 years old, and he's not, you know, a good-looking guy. He's, you know, gray and kind of fat. And he was posting, like, this was some sort of Romeo and Juliet situation. He put on there some quotes about, you know, love, and then hashtagged it with, "I got an idea," right before he abducted this 15-year-old. And the scary situation is that Elizabeth Thomas told a sibling if she was not back by 6 p.m. to call law enforcement, which means that she had an inkling that something bad could happen, that he may have been up to something no good, which is scary. It's startling. And there's also new reports coming out right before we went on the air that he was doing searches on his computer. Law enforcement has released this, that he was searching about a vehicle, if there were things on his vehicle that could be used to track him, and he was also researching laws on teen marriage.
Oh,
creep.
No.
Yeah, so creepy. Just to let everybody know, Elizabeth Thomas has hazel eyes. She's a brunette. She's 5'5", 120 pounds. She was last seen wearing a flannel shirt and black leggings, and Tad Cummins is 6 foot tall. He's white. He has brown hair. It's graying. He has a mustache as well. It's graying, although he did purchase hair dye. He could have changed his appearance, the color of his hair, and he's armed. He's armed and dangerous, and he drives a Nissan Rogue Silver with Tennessee license plate of 976ZPT. So that's what we know about Tad Cummins, the sicko teacher in East Tennessee.
He is a sicko. And again, people that poo-poo this, you don't understand the manipulation and the trauma that goes behind something like this. I think of when I was 15, and if that would have happened to me, I could have easily been influenced by an older man thinking that that was cool and getting away from my parents. That's why, like Jim Clemente said, it is imperative that we talk to our children and let them know, hey, it's just not stranger danger, but it's also master manipulation, like, say, by a 50-year-old former teacher gone bad. I really hope they find them soon, because
It's been released that she may have been having some personal issues, and he took advantage of that, and that's what predators do. They take advantage of personal issues that are going on in their victims' lives, and that shows you the predatory nature of this Tad Cummings. And the strange thing about this is that he was working in the healthcare system. I forgot exactly what his title was, but he wanted to become a teacher, and he was given very high praises from his colleagues that recommended him for this job. He, you know, took tests before becoming a teacher, and he scored extremely high on them. And by all accounts, he was a great teacher until this incident happened, where he was caught by another student kissing Elizabeth on the cheek, and now he's on Instagram right before the abduction acting like a teenager, putting quotes about love on there, hashtagging it, I got an idea. She's putting a picture of a ring and hashtagging it with married and or wife. So this is a scary situation right here.
It's very scary, and the damage that can be done to this teenager is immense. And, you know, everybody's thought goes into that dark place. He's armed and dangerous. Would he be the type that would kill her and then, you know, try to kill himself and not? We've seen that happen a lot. Obviously, he's only going to think about himself, and he's only going to do what's best, what he thinks is best for him. You have to wonder, Levi, this is the first time we've heard of this man, but you have to wonder, just like in my high school, fortunately the teachers I'm referring to are all gone to the great teaching place in the sky. They're gone now. They're not in school teaching anybody. But you have to wonder, was this his first student? Is this something he's done a lot? I would venture to say yes, absolutely.
Yes. I don't know how long he's been teaching. This may be his first victim, and he may have gone into teaching, into education, simply because he wanted to prey on teenage girls, which is also startling as well. But we haven't heard anything about any other victims, and down the road we could.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe the police have some victims now we just haven't heard from. It's going to be interesting to see if they are praying that this guy is found, and that Elizabeth is okay, that this maniac hasn't done, I'm sure he's done horrible things to her, but I hope she's alive and we can get this guy, get him off the street, and get him away from our kids. Okay, Levi, let's talk about your Haley Cummings podcast. Fascinating, and I apologize for saying it was on the wrong network. It's on iTunes. So where are we at in the podcast series about Haley?
Okay, so there are four episodes up. In the next few days, I'm going to be releasing episode 5. But go to iTunes if you have an iPhone, any Apple device, iPad. You can also go to the podcast app, and you can type in Haley Cummings Mystery. If you don't have iTunes, you can go to my website, levipagetv.com. All episodes are there at levipagetv.com. But subscribe on iTunes. If you like it, leave a review. And we're delving into the case of Haley Cummings. She was 5 years old when she vanished. She went missing from the small town of Satsuma, Florida. The last person to see her alive was Misty Crossland. And we really delve into Misty's story. Does Misty Crossland's story make sense? And it does not make sense. This is a trailer, a mobile home that they were living in. Haley was in the same room as Misty Crossland, asleep feet away from Misty Crossland on an air mattress. So what are the likely chances that someone can break into a home and steal a child with someone sleeping in the same room and they do not wake up? And Misty Crossland says that she woke up and Haley was gone. And here is one of the big problems with Misty's story that a lot of people may not know, is that the previous tenants in this mobile home have said that the floors were notoriously squeaky, that if somebody abducted someone, that you would have to be drunk or high out of your mind not to hear that. We also know that Misty Crossland said that Haley Cummings was last seen wearing a pink shirt, but that pink shirt was later discovered in the washing machine. And I zeroed in on that pink shirt because in the washing machine, and that was the pink shirt that Misty says Haley was last seen wearing. And the reason I zeroed in on that is because what are the chances that a predator is going to come in and abduct a child, but before abducting them says, hey, take off your shirt, let's put it in the washing machine? That does not make sense. And a lot of people are saying, well, it could have been any pink shirt, but Misty Crossland even admitted that that was the pink shirt that Haley had on the night that she vanished. So that's interesting to me. Why would that be in the washing machine? Was Misty Crossland trying to cover up evidence that could possibly be on that pink shirt? And the reason that that is so crucial is because everybody remember the 911 call, and episode one focuses exclusively on the 911 call, is that Misty mentions out of the blue, I was doing laundry earlier. Now, I don't know about you, Tricia, but if someone close to us vanishes, they go missing, and we're calling 911, we're not going to mention our household chores during that 911 call. We're going to stick to the fact that our loved one is gone. But she mentioned the fact that she was doing laundry earlier, which to me is like a slip, a Freudian slip.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what evidence was on that pink shirt. We do know that the Putnam County Sheriff's Office has said that there was physical evidence at the mobile home that contradicted Misty's version of events. And I'm wondering if that pink shirt contains that evidence. So we go into Misty's story. We dissect the 911 call. And we delve into Haley's grandmother and her father, Ronald. What we know about Ronald is that he was abusive. There were photographs of Haley with bruises all over her, and Ronald claims that it was because of a fall on a playground. But you will see in these photographs that the bruises become darker. There are more injuries over time, and it was not consistent with a fall. And there are witnesses that claim that Ronald was abusive to Haley. They witnessed abuse. We delve into Ronald's history of abusing Haley's biological mother, Crystal Sheffield. And many people say Ronald had nothing to do with this, that he was at work at the time Haley went missing. But in a later episode, you will see that there is actually a witness that spotted Ronald Cummings not at work the night that Haley vanished.
Yes,
and we're going to get into that in a future episode, and we're also going to focus on the fact that there have been employees at PDM Bridge, where Ronald was employed, that say that he had been known to sneak out of work. And we also know that Misty Crossland would leave the mobile home while she was supposed to be watching Misty and Misty's younger brother, Ron Jr. She would leave. And on many occasions, Ronald Cummings would take his children to work with them and leave them inside his truck while he worked. There were people that worked there that witnessed him leaving work during his breaks to go check on the kids. There are also witnesses that say they were left at the home by themselves. People heard them crying inside the home when Misty and Ronald would leave them. So there's a lot to this case. It's an extremely sad case. Haley's been missing 8 years, and law enforcement has not been able to figure out exactly what happened to her. What we do know is that they were arrested for drug trafficking. Haley's father, Ronald, Misty, the babysitter, and Misty's brother, Tommy Crossland. They were arrested for dealing drugs, caught on an undercover drug sting. In our next episode, we're going to get into the drug bust and exactly what that means for the case. As you know, Misty Crossland was sentenced to 25 years in prison. Tommy Crossland, her brother, was sentenced to 15 years, and Ronald Cummings was sentenced to 15 years in prison. And what is interesting is Ronald's charges. He actually made a plea deal with the state attorney, and part of his plea deal was that he was going to do a proffer agreement, and that comes with immunity. Now, we do know that it was not about the drugs. We know it had to be about Haley Cummings because there was no need to offer anyone immunity on those drug charges because it was caught on tape. They had every single member involved caught on tape. There was no reason to do a proffer agreement with anyone. But Ronald Cummings struck a deal. He got a proffer agreement. And we know that that had to be about Haley. And in part of that agreement, he had to testify against any person that the state attorney chose to bring charges on in the Haley Cummings case. They have not done so yet, but any future prosecution, he has to testify or else that deal's off the table. And what that means, they had to have some sort of leverage hanging over him to charge him regarding something in Haley's case in order for there to be a proffer agreement. Because, Tricia, if I'm innocent of a crime, what am I doing making an agreement with a prosecutor to testify against one? And what am I doing entering into a proffer? Innocent people don't do that. Exactly. People that are party to a crime do, which means that it's a big possibility that Ronald was an accomplice, that he knew what happened to Haley, but he did not. Let's just say, I'm throwing this out here, it's a theory. Let's say Misty Crossland, we know she'd been partying. We get into the partying and what she was doing before Haley vanished on the podcast. But let's just say she was in no condition to watch Haley. So she wanted kids to sleep, so she gave them something. And Ronald told her what to give the children. And it was, we know that he's a drug dealer. She's a drug dealer. They were both involved in drugs. They gave interview where they were both high as a kite. What if he told her, hey, use some of my drugs out of my stash and give that to them, and Haley died? That would make him have accomplice liability. That would make him party to a crime. That would also maybe even put him in the same pot as Misty, and he could have been her.
That's right.
He reached this deal, which to me, that proves he was involved. So all of these people that want to say that he was, you know, an innocent father, he had nothing to do with it, his alibi was concrete, that is BS. And that proffer agreement. And there's four episodes up. The first episode, we get into the 911 call. The second episode, we get into Ronald's grandmother, Teresa, who's not been examined a lot on a lot of the television shows, all of this case. But we get into Teresa Neves, and there's a lot of suspicious behavior there. A lot of Web Sleuth members also got into her behavior on the Web Sleuth forum dedicated to the Haley Cummings case. And one Web Sleuth member, Papa, that's a Web Sleuth member, he actually got his hands on an eviction of Teresa Neves, where she was evicted from a property a year after Haley has vanished. It was like right on the anniversary of Haley's disappearance, where she and her boyfriend were evicted from an apartment complex 80 miles from where Haley vanished. Now, Teresa Neves claimed that she got a telephone call from Ronald as soon as he got home from work, and that she arrived 5 minutes after getting off the telephone with Ronald. Now, she was living 80 miles away. How did she get there that fast?
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say she was living within driving distance. She gave an interview to Greta Van Susteren where she said that she was living 10 to 15 miles away from where Haley vanished. How are you going to show up in 5 minutes?
You're not. Yeah.
When there's, you're living 10
else.
To 15 miles away. So
right.
a
there's
lot of people
else.
Think, a lot of people think, and I think that there's some there to this theory, that Teresa Neves knew what happened to Haley ahead of time and could have been already on her way. She could have been
mm-hmm.
called before 911, which would be extremely damning. And we know that Teresa Neves went above and beyond to defend Misty Crossland. And she lied to the media in defense of Misty Crossland. She painted Misty Crossland as the best girlfriend that Ronald has ever had, that she was great with the kids, but she knew for a fact that Misty Crossland had just got done doing drugs, drinking alcohol, and sleeping and cheating on Ronald Cummings with a man that went by the nickname White Boy Greg right before
oh,
Haley vanished. She knew that, and she still defended Misty. She
you know what's
even
ironic,
knew-
Levi? It's
mm-hmm.
like maybe Misty was the best girlfriend Ron had ever had. Maybe her worst ones out there, if possible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Continue.
Yeah, that's a good point, which would
mm-hmm.
show you that Ronald Cummings has horrible choice in women. And
exactly.
anybody that would get with him has horrible choice in men. But
yeah.
she defended Misty, and she knew that Misty did not even want to babysit Haley because it later came out that Misty Crossland did not want to babysit Haley. Her and Ronald got into an argument about babysitting Haley. Misty Crossland was
mm-hmm.
aware of this because Teresa Neves even offered to pay Misty to babysit Haley that night. So she was aware that Misty was having problems with Ronald. She was aware they got into an argument. She was aware Misty had been using drugs. She was aware that Misty had been partying. She was aware that Misty had cheated on Ronald.
Mm-hmm.
So her behavior is extremely suspicious. And if you recall, do you remember whenever Ronald Cummings was arrested and he is in jail and he's talking on the phone to his mother, Teresa Neves, and his great and his grandmother, Haley's great-grandmother, Annette Sykes. And Annette Sykes even tells Ronald, she says, be careful in prison, in jail, of snitches, which could make
wow.
them believe that they are aware that Ronald knew more than what he was telling, and they didn't want the truth
mm-hmm.
to come out. And do you
so
also
much.
Remember what's also stunning about this is that a month after Haley vanishes, everybody remembers Ronald and Misty got married, and everybody was like, what the hell are these two doing getting married a month after
mm-hmm.
this child goes missing? That was odd. They went to New York City. They did an interview on the Today Show. And Teresa Neves accompanied them. And Haley is missing. Nobody knows where she is. She could have been abducted by a pedophile. God knows
mm-hmm.
the horrible scenario that could have happened to her. And they were in New York City, and they were taking selfies together. They were kissing each other. They were smiling ear to ear. Sticking
mm-hmm.
their tongues out. It was like a celebration. And meanwhile, this five-year-old is missing, possibly dead. We know that
mm-hmm.
police now say that it's a homicide. And here they are acting like this. Strange people, really strange people, people that had no business taking care of a five-year-old child.
Boy, that is the truth. We have a question from the chat room. And this is from Separating Fact from Fiction, who, by the way, loves your podcast. This person says,
well, thank you for
what
listening.
Do you think about the possibility? Yeah, she's very, I have a lot of people listen. You're very, very popular, Levi. I've always told you that. Haley, what are the possibilities that a relative got involved with this and Haley was unfortunately put in the swamp for the alligators? That's kind of been the theory for quite some time. Is there a lot of weight to that theory?
Yes, we do know that Ronald Cummings, Haley's father, and Joe Overstreet, who is Misty Crossland's cousin, that's the person that she claims killed Haley, and Tommy, Misty's brother, also claimed, and then they later recanted. They've told so many stories. But he was visiting from Tennessee, and he went back to Tennessee right after Haley vanished. And they claim, Haley's father Ronald claims that he and Joe would go to the St. John's River, that's a river that has been searched for Haley's body, and that they would throw animals, such as baby deer, into this river, and they would watch the alligators come and eat the animals. And they enjoyed seeing that, which is extremely disturbing. Hello, I think I'm off.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mute button went on for a second. Sorry about that.
Okay, I was like, what?
What the heck? Have you heard anything about Judy, about Haley's little brother?
He was, Ronald Cummings was stripped of his parental rights of Junior. He is not living with Ronald's family, the paternal side.
Mm-hmm.
He is living, I think, with Crystal's father, Crystal Sheffield's father, and Crystal does not have custody of him either, but he is with her, Crystal's father.
Well, let's hope he's doing okay. Ron is still in prison, right?
He is still in prison. He is in prison. He got a swastika tattoo while he was in prison on his neck.
What a delightful
and
child.
And according to my sources, he's still up to his old ways. Teresa Neves, his mother actually contacted someone that came to me and was crying
mm-hmm.
and extremely upset. This person actually was a big believer in Ronald's innocence, a big supporter of Teresa Neves. She had followed
mm-hmm.
the case, and Teresa Neves came to her. She wanted her to visit Ronald in prison, and she wanted her to sneak in some drugs for Ronald.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh.
And this person was extremely upset, was crying and crushed at this. So
mm-hmm.
they're up to their old ways, and I do know that Ronald and Misty are in communication via Teresa Neves. They are writing letters to each other. I do know that there was a follower of the case that was visiting Ronald in prison, and they claimed to be a couple. And she was even bringing her kid all the way from
Kentucky. Oh, do not tell me that. That makes my head explode. Don't tell me someone
was dumb
enough to do that.
Yes, and she and her kids were posing and taking pictures with Ronald like he was a celebrity. And she even moved into Teresa Neves' home. So that shows you the kind of nuts that were attracted to Haley's paternal family.
This makes people on the Jerry Springer show look like European royalty. I mean, this is it is so bad. Every ridiculous stereotype seems to be coming true with this family. And God, I just hope they don't have any more kids. You know, stop the line. Stop it right now. You don't want to bring any more kids into this world. It'll turn out you.
Remember, Trisha, it had come out that Ronald had more kids besides Haley and Junior. He had a child that had some issues, I think maybe Down syndrome,
mm-hmm.
if I am correct,
mm-hmm.
with a different woman. That woman claimed that Ronald was abusive. Ronald had nothing to do with the child. I think he was even stripped of his parental rights with that child as well. And that happened just a couple of years ago while he was in prison. There was a super secret hearing regarding a child custody issue, and many people believe it had to do with that child that Ronald never claimed, Ronald never supported, Ronald never had anything to do with a woman that he was allegedly abusive to.
I'm just sitting here, my mouth is hanging open. I need a spatula to pick it up off the floor. What is about this man? There is nothing appealing about him. There is nothing good about him. And you want to have sex with him and have his baby? Are you kidding me? Oh, my God. I can't take it. And, you know, unfortunately, there are people like Ronald Cummings all over the place, and women just trot in there, have another baby, and trot back out. It makes me sick. It really does, and it makes me crazy. And I feel like, as in Kaylee's case, like Nancy Grace said, I feel in Haley's case, she never had a chance, not with Ronald and Misty.
I agree.
She just didn't, and it's so, so tragic. Levi, once again, you have been an incredible guest and very informative. The facts you know amaze me. I you know, I can barely remember my name some days, and you can just
well, Trisha, I hope everybody,
like
I hope everybody listens to the podcast. You can go to iTunes in the search bar, type in Haley Cummings Mystery. You can also Google Haley Cummings Mystery, and you'll find the link. There's four episodes. I'm going to release episode five in a couple of days. And hopefully we can get some new information out about Ronald Cummings' alibi, because I know there are witnesses that spotted him out of work, and I'm going to call those people and get them on the show.
Oh, perfect. Oh, I can't wait for that. Okay, Levi, just keep us posted on your show. We'll get the links out there as soon as you put them up. Levi Page, thank you once again for making
Thank you, Trisha. Big
radio.
Fan.
And, oh, thank you. You are such a doll. Big fan of yours, too, my dear. And we'll be back next week. I hope you'll join us. Bessie, thank you for doing all the heavy lifting. My apologies for the delay there in my mute button was on. I just didn't know it. It was that simple. Okay, everybody, back next week with more true crime. Don't forget, websleuth.com, okay? Sleuth with a purpose. Next week, Blog Talk Radio right here, 8 p.m. Eastern, with yours truly. Hope to talk to you then. Take care now. Bye-bye.